So this evening we're going to talk about pain. And in thinking about talking about this subject, and thinking that, you know, some people might prefer to hear something really inspiring, you know, about love. That was a topic last week that someone wanted to talk about. That pain wouldn't interest people and whatever. But I think it's a very important topic because I think most of you have probably come up against it a little bit in your practice. And as a culture which avoids pain, the tendency for a lot of people is when they first start feeling some pain in their meditation practice is maybe to panic and maybe even give up their meditation practice or retreat from the pain and just keep it at a kind of far away, at a distance. And I thought of telling you the story, which I thought of in relationship to this topic today. I met a woman in January who's been a Zen student for 25 years, or longer, no, 30 years. And she started more or less as a Zen student when she was 14 or 15, in something like 1964 or 65, when she was living down here in the peninsula someplace around Palo Alto at the times when, I guess, the marijuana and acid had kind of begun showing up in the scene in San Francisco. And so she was kind of part of that early flower child scene as a young teenager. And then she had heard that there was this Zen priest in San Francisco who could get you high without drugs. And there was Suzuki Roshi. So she thought she'd go out, you know, so she went and kind of decked herself out like an Indian, she said, and went up there to kind of, you know, to talk to this guy about how to do that. She thought that was really great. And so he was really happy to see them, and he invited them into the one of the meeting halls they had, and proceeded to give them a talk, those two teenage girls, women, a talk on the Four Noble Truths. And the first truth is that there is suffering, and the second truth is that there's a cause of suffering, and so forth. And this wasn't what they had come for, to hear about suffering. And they heard about getting high. They wanted to hear about getting high. But the way in which Suzuki Roshi talked about suffering was with so much boundless joy, she said, that it was something that was incongruous. And because he could speak with so much joy, she was inspired, and she wanted to find out more about what this guy had to teach. And I think it took a few years, but then she eventually became a Zen student. And that was a great story. So I don't know if I can sit here with radiating joy talking about pain, but I don't know if it's appropriate, but. And in thinking about pain and how to work with pain in our practice, I thought about what I talked about in the one-day sitting two weekends ago, and that is that the word for concentration in Pali, in the Buddhist language, is samadhi. And the word samadhi, the etymological roots of the word, is... the sum of that word means with, so like the English word con. And the second part of the root, the dhi part, means to stand or to pose. And so if you put them together into English, rather than getting concentration, what you could get is to be composed. And so I think I like that word a lot, because I think one of the things we're doing in mindfulness practice is composing ourselves on our situation, composing ourselves, on our experience. And not necessarily getting concentrated in terms of being focused one-pointedly and excluding everything else from our awareness, but finding some composure in the midst of our experience. And one of the areas that's most difficult to find composure is around pain. And so can we find composure can we compose our presence on the pain, so that it's okay to experience the pain so we don't panic, and find some composure, some spaciousness, some peace in the midst of the pain. And one way to do that, and I'll talk about some ways of doing that, one way to do that is to get concentrated. But even so, I think I prefer the word to be composed. Because you can notice when you've lost your composure. You can kind of feel that in various ways. And when you feel yourself, and that's a very interesting information to be mindful of, the fragmentation of our awareness, the leaning forward or the reaching forward or the contracting of our sense of presence. And you can kind of feel that, the agitation and restlessness. And at times it's possible when you feel it, when you're aware of it, at times it's possible to just simply, very simply, directly reestablish your composure. And when you can't, then the feeling of being uncomposed, unsettled on oneself, that itself becomes the meditation practice. And frequently enough, as a teacher, I have people who come talk to me, often usually people more or less beginning in meditation practice, who will come to me and say some version of, if I didn't have pain, then I could really meditate. As if the pain was getting in the way of the meditation practice. And it's very easy to have that notion if you think that the purpose or the function of mindfulness practice is to get calm or to get peaceful directly. And then you set up this kind of duality, this conflict between the state of being calm and the state of being in pain. And mindfulness practice is about being open-hearted or composed in the midst of our experience. So can we discover some open-heartedness or some composure with whatever our experience is? And meditation practice is a very useful and very important place, I feel, to learn about ourselves through the avenue of physical pain that might come up. You don't want to look for pain. When I first started noticing the... I don't know if I should say this. I was accused of being the warrior last week. But maybe I have part... That's part of who I am, I guess. But I hope it doesn't come out in my teaching. But... when I first noticed how much I could learn about myself by physical pain, I went to my teacher and asked him if I should sit in full lotus. And he said, you know, no, it's not Buddhist to go looking for pain. It's enough just to deal with what life gives you. You don't have to go out and make any. And I had to deal with a lot of pain, physical pain, when I first started sitting. I didn't have a body that was very well suited to taking this posture. And I was also very, very naive about meditation, and I was doing Zen practice, and the impression you get in Zen practice was you're not supposed to move. So I thought, well, you're not supposed to move. And so I didn't know any better. I didn't know it was okay to move. So I remember having to sit with a lot of physical pain. I do these one-day sittings where I would just be burning. And then I would get up to do the walking meditation, and the whole walking period, I would just be shaking. And by the end of the walking period, I managed to calm down enough to go back and sit again. And then I would sit and then get up again the next walking period and shake. And I don't recommend that way. Maybe I learned that the hard way, that you don't have to push yourself that much. It's fine to change your posture, and you don't have to push against pain so much. But a useful way of working with pain is when pain does arise, is don't immediately change your posture, don't immediately retreat from it, but stay with it for a while, hang out with it for a while. And it can be just for a minute, it can be for 10 seconds, it can be for 5 minutes. Ride your edge there, getting to know a little bit. And maybe for kind of mild pains, kind of lightweight pains of your... you can spend more time and really kind of develop your composure, your awareness, your exploration, your investigation on the more milder pains that might come up. You might have a sore throat, or you might have a mild headache, or you might have just mild pain in your ankle or something. And kind of work with those, get to know the terrain with those. So when you have stronger pains in your life, which are unavoidable, you're prepared. You know some of the terrain. You know some of the ways you react and respond. So it's not, you know, so foreign to you. I think part of what can happen in life, there are times when there's sufferings and pains and griefs which are just immense and huge, and there's no knowing when they're going to arise. And sometimes people will come to me asking about how they can work with tremendously difficult states. And I'll say things the best I can to kind of help them with working with those things. But it's a lot better if people start learning to meditate or be mindful before the crisis, and kind of work with the small things, and kind of learn the terrain. And then after learning the terrain, they're prepared, they have a grounding to work with the crises when they arise. There are three kinds of pain that might arise for someone when they meditate. One kind is a structural pain. And this is a kind of pain that arises because either because you're sitting in a funny way and you need to find a better posture. You need to either sit in a chair, or you need to get a bench, or you need to find a better way to sit on the cushion, or you need to straighten out your back because your back isn't, not sitting not so straight. Or sometimes the holding patterns of a lifetime are kind of not so aligned, and so we have poor posture. And so when you sit straight in meditation, you're confronting your old holding patterns. If you're hunched a lot, and then you sit up straight when you meditate, it becomes two things happen. So there's new muscles that are weak after work. And so those muscles get tired and they get sore after a while. Or you're meeting or pushing against muscles which are really tight. And as you push against them, they kind of scream. And so there's often for people when they first begin meditating, there's a lot of negotiation in the body of the kind of physical discomfort that comes from the way we've held ourselves kind of structurally. So when you first start meditating, it's important to experiment with different ways of meditating, different postures, and find one that suits you, that allows you to sit in a stable way for the length of time of your meditation practice. And then also cultivating some patience, knowing that there's some adjustment that has to happen. Some muscles have to get stronger, some tendons or muscles need to stretch or get stretched. And with time, those things will happen. Related to this, maybe what I call structural pain, is a kind of a pain that's warning signals, that are kind of danger signals that you need to pay attention to. All pain is useful to pay attention to, but some physical pains are saying, hey, this is dangerous, and you need to do something, you need to change what you're doing. And I've known a lot of people who have been too gung-ho in their meditation practice, thinking that you just stay there solidly still and not move, and they didn't bring that fine tune of mindfulness to their experience to be able to recognize when the signal was saying, this is dangerous. Sitting any longer with your knees in full lotus or in half lotus or sitting in any kind of way, you're going to damage your knees. A lot of Zen students damage their knees because they haven't learned to listen to those signals, those danger signals. They haven't learned to listen to their body very much at all. And I think the body will make it very clear when it's a danger signal. And if you listen, it'll tell you. And then you should change your posture. Don't hesitate at all. So there's that. And then the first category is kind of more structural or kind of purely physical stuff. The second category of physical pain, it arises out of our psychology, our emotional life. And it's our tensions, our griefs, our angers, our worries, our depression, our despair. All these things are a kind of physical, mental kind of holding. And any kind of mental holding happens also in the body. And there's a kind of, things happen in the body when you have a lot of these kind of emotions. If the emotions become chronic or stay for some length of time, there is a contraction or kind of a holding that happens, and it happens in the body. And if you spend a significant period of your life in these kinds of contracted states around an emotion, then the body will stay contracted. And they might stay contracted for years and years. And one of the things that happens when you begin to meditate is you begin meeting these levels of tension or contraction. these holding places in the body, and they can be extremely painful, very, very tight. One of the things that happens when people start meditating is initially there's a level of relaxation or calm that might happen. And with relaxation and the calm, the surface muscles of the body, the surface tensions, begin to relax. And it feels quite good for a while. But then as the surface muscles relax, the underlying muscles that are underneath that, that have been hidden, kind of been covered by the surface muscles, reveal themselves. You get in touch with them. And they might be a lot more tense than the surface muscles. And so you relax for a while, and then you've been relaxed for a while, and suddenly you feel all this tension in your body and all this pain. And then people will come to me and say, well, things are going backwards in my meditation practice. I was doing really well for a while, I was getting calm and everything, and now I'm all tense. And it isn't that they've gotten more tense, it's that they've discovered an underlying level of tension that has been hidden from view, from awareness. And many of us, when we have physical tension and holding, we'll often treat our body as something like an object that you can manipulate. And if you go to some doctors who will look, you know, if you go say you have a lot of tension or cramping somewhere, they'll just see that you have a body and they should take a muscle relaxant, or they'll tell you to go get a massage. And they don't really see that there's a deeper part of that bodily phenomena. That they see the body as an object and not the body as a subject of who we are. Our body is who we are. It's not a body that we have. It's a body that we are. So our attitudes that we have for our life get expressed in our bodies. And a lot of the tension and physical pains that people have in their body, not all of it, but a significant amount of it, arises out of what can be considered kind of psychological sources. And so you want to be able to, you want to attend to those things. You want to, rather than just taking an aspirin for your headache, it's more useful in the long run to learn to recognize how you get tense around certain activities or certain people. If you just keep taking the aspirin, you're not going to, you know, you're more likely to kind of go into a pattern where you rely on the aspirin and not understanding. Also, what happens with all forms of pain is that our psychological reaction to the pain often creates contraction around the physical pain. And it exasperates the pain. You feel some pain and we panic, and then the reaction of the body to any kind of pain usually is to contract around it, to kind of push it away or do something to it. And that contraction often creates more pain. And then often you get into vicious cycles. If anybody has had their back go into spasms, knows about this, how this can work, how you can get these cycles. And what you need to do sometimes with back pain is to stop the spasming, which has become almost automatic. This psychological pain sometimes is very interesting pain. People sometimes will be sitting in a meditation session and feel a lot of pain, and they just can't wait for the bell to ring so they can kind of end the session and change their posture. And this is, you know, it's more pain they can stand. They can't stand, it's horrible, and they're never going to meditate it again, and they just whatever, you know, make a story around it. And then the bell rings. And they don't change the posture, they don't change anything, but immediately the pain goes away. And this is, you know, what's going on. And maybe you're distracted by the bell, but I think often what happens is that there's a whole part of your experience of pain is related to how we're interpreting the situation and how our psychology gets involved in it. When I was in college in Davis, I used to bike to school every day. And in the wintertime, they had this tule fog, and it was really, really cold in this fog. And I'd bike to school with my bare hands on the bicycle, on the handrail, and handlebars. And my hands would get numb from being so cold. I'd get to class and I couldn't hold a pen for a while because they were so numb. It was really bitingly cold. And I used to drive to school every morning and hate how much it hurts and have all this aversion towards it. And just, there's a Hulk, you know, just. And then at some point, I was riding and feeling this pain of the cold, and I remembered it was exactly the same feeling, sensation, that I used to have when I went skiing. And skiing was just so exhilarating, and just all the sensations around were great, and it was wonderful, and suddenly it was exactly the same feeling in the hand. And why was it painful in one situation, and I hated it, and exhilarating in the other? And from that to the day, that the cold stopped bothering me. Just this is very simple kind of change of perception or change of association. How much of it is, you know, has to do with our associations or interpretations? It could have been the other way. One of the things about chronic pain, whether it's physical or emotional based, is that if it's chronic, it tends to become numb after a while. And the body has this mechanism for numbing chronic pain. And part of it is comes from contractions. There's a lot of contractions. If you hold your fist really, really tight so it hurts, if you hold it that way, I think after a while you'll see, you feel that the pain stops, it stops hurting. There's a way in which contraction, enough contraction sometimes, will cover up and numb the situation. And what happens as we open up to our physical experience, open up to our body in meditation practice, is we start loosening up a little bit, and it's very, very painful as we begin loosening up. And it can be almost more painful loosening up than the initial kind of injury or initial kind of holding that might be there. And so if you want to open up, if it has value to you, you need to kind of be able to have the patience to allow that opening to happen and sit with that pain. And I would argue that it's very valuable to do that, because as long as you're in a state of contraction, whether it's around an emotion or around physical pain, you're limiting your capacity both to live fully physically in a body, but also to feel fully. If you have a lot of grief and you can't stand the grief, it's too much for you, and so you close down around the grief, you're closing down a certain capacity we have for feeling, certain capacity of the heart. And if we want to, live fully in all our capacities, we have to open up to where we're contracted and where we're held. Some people, some researchers in recent times have claimed or said or found out that we also numb ourselves by the release of endorphins in our body. And one of the ways of releasing endorphins into our body is through being under a lot of stress. And some people find, apparently, that if you sit in meditation and calm down a little bit, you calm down your stress level. Your stress level calms down. The endorphins stop being produced. You have less endorphins numbing the pain. And what do you discover? You discover that you have a body that has pain. And it's always there, but you just kind of, it's been covered. And to a greater degree, to a great degree, the desensitization of the body is almost synonymous with a kind of a depersonalization. We become less of a person the more desensitized we are to ourselves and to our emotions and our body. Well, so it's nice to think of pain, physical pain, as a symptom or as a messenger. And as a messenger you should pay attention to. You should always pay attention to it. There's something to be learned there. It might be what you need to learn is to change your posture and move. It could be that you need to attend to certain emotions which are held there. It might be that you're just It's a messenger. And too many people kill the messenger. And that's not so useful. So when you feel pain, physical pain, one of the things you want to do is to find out what is it that wants your attention? What is it that's to be learned there? What is it that needs to be paid attention to? And then to be complete, the third form of physical pain that can arise in meditation practice is what is sometimes called dharmic pain. And dharmic pain is somewhat of a strange, it's kind of a strange term. It's a kind of a physical pain that seems to arise for some people in their meditation experience, usually on longer retreats, that doesn't seem to have any reason or cause at all. And as soon as you stop meditating, it disappears. And if your concentration gets a little bit lessened, it disappears. If your concentration gets really deep, it disappears. It seems to have sometimes has something to do with a certain level of concentration. It can be very, very powerful pain. And there doesn't seem to be any reason for it. And no one knows why it's there. And it's just a place to cultivate composure. And it's something you need to work your way through. It needs to be there. It's kind of a phase you go through, and you work through that phase, and then it passes. Though it's often useful to kind of have some sense of a reason for something. I had something like this kind of dharmic pain on one of my longer retreats, and I had a tremendous amount of pain behind my shoulder blade, kind of low down my back, mid back, and it went on for a long time. It was very, very one of the most painful things I've had in my life. And I sat there and I tried to develop equanimity and mindfulness and do all the things you're supposed to do on pain. And I'd go to my teacher and he would tell me things to do, and then I go to my other teacher and she would tell me things to do, and finally, nothing seemed to help, and I was trying to practice composure and equanimity, and it was hopeless. And finally, I went to my teacher and one last time and complained again. What can I do? You have to give me something to do. So how do I approach it? What do I do with it? And he said, "Oh, who knows why you had that pain there? Maybe in a former lifetime you slugged someone in the shoulder." I don't think much about rebirth. But as soon as he said that, my feeling was, oh, it's there for a reason. I don't have to know the reason, but it's there for a reason. And so I relaxed. And then it was fine to have it. And the equanimity that had been so elusive suddenly was there. So sometimes having some faith that it's there because it's supposed to be there can make it a lot easier. You're not fighting it or resisting it. And it's often said that the resistance to pain, resistance to any kind of suffering, is sometimes the worst form of pain, the worst form of suffering. Which comes to the next thing about how to work with physical pain when it arises. And one of the most important things you can learn in mindfulness practice is the difference between what your experience is, your direct experience, and how you relate to that experience, how you interpret the experience, what you think about the experience. To see that the way you think about it, the way you relate to it, is different from the experience itself. And one of the most useful places to see this, because it can be so glaring and really it demands that you notice this, is around physical pain. For many people, it's the first place they see this relationship between the mind and body, or suffering and our experience and our relationship to experience. Because physical pain is, in a sense, just raw data. It's kind of a neutral experience in the universe. Suffering is different from the pain. Suffering arises from how we relate to that pain. Suffering has to do with self-pity and aversion and hate and contraction and pulling away and despair and discouragement and all these kinds of things that arise in relationship to the physical pain. So one of the things that's very useful to do when the physical pain becomes strong is to notice the difference between those two. And if you can notice the difference between those two, then you're gone a long way towards beginning to cultivate some composure. Because you might see that the secondary reactions are secondary reactions. That in a sense, they're optional. It's optional whether you're going to have self-pity or not. And if you see it's optional, maybe, not always, but sometimes you can just, oh, I don't need this. and you can relax. And you're left with just the raw pain. And it's a lot easier to be with raw pain than to be with raw pain and self-pity or aversion or hate or whatever we feel for the pain. And what happens for most of us is the physical pain and our reaction to the pain, the psychological reaction to it, are so intertwined that we don't see them as being different. And part of what mindfulness does is it begins separating out these two levels of the experience. And also, when you start seeing the secondary reactions, you can often see the way in which we contract around the pain. And if you can see that, then you can sometimes let go of the contraction around the pain and have less pain than you don't have to add any extra levels of pain to it. I had a friend of mine who was a Zen priest. In his early years of sitting Zazen, he had a lot of physical pain in his knee. Maybe this is an example of someone who doesn't pay attention to the warning signs. It's also kind of an example maybe of secondary pain. But he had this physical pain in his knees. So he was angry at his knees. So he wanted to get back at his knees. So whenever his knees hurt him, he hurt his knees back, but kind of pushing back at them. And he ended up ruining his knees. And, he just seems kind of unnecessary. So in the process of paying attention to the secondary reactions to pain, we can also notice what our thoughts are to them, the way we think about them. And you can notice such thoughts as, I can't stand it, or this is killing me, or it's hopeless. And what are the interesting things you can do around noticing you have these kinds of thoughts, or you think, why do I have to do this? This is ridiculous. Is it's possible to notice there's a certain amount of energy and effort into that kind of thought thinking. And it's possible to rechannel that energy, that to pay attention more carefully to the pain itself. And that's really the heart of mindfulness practice, how we work with pain, is we bring and we focus on the pain. And we pay very careful attention to it. It just occurred to me that this subject of pain, we don't maybe give whole Dharma talks on it that often, but it's one of the major contributions this practice has given to the whole field of pain and stress management in our culture, in our country. And it's really been found to be very, very effective to working with pain and stress. And if you spend some time learning about it, you'll learn a lot about your life. But the heart of it all is to bring awareness to the pain. And many people, when you tell them you're supposed to pay attention to the pain, they think you're crazy. Because what you're supposed to do, of course, any sane person tries to avoid pain, or tries not to have pain. The last thing you want to do is bring your awareness to it. But we want to, in mindfulness practice, we want to bring very careful awareness to the pain when it's there. And get to know it very, very well. Explore it very, very carefully. Because what pain is almost always very different from what it looks like at a distance. And when we look at it from a distance, like, oh, pain, I have to find some way to avoid it. It seems kind of like monolithic. It seems like huge and massive and solid, and it's never going to go away. It's permanent, and it's. But if you look very carefully at it and bring your awareness close to it, you'll find that it's not this solid event, this solid thing called pain, but it's made up of many different sensations, and the sensations are in constant motion. There's a dance of sensations. They're constantly moving about. They're not even in one place. If you bring your awareness very, very close to pain, you'll see that, if you have a pain in your knee, it isn't that your whole knee's on fire. There's sparks of fire sparking all over the different places in the knee. And it's not just simply pain, but it's all these other sensations of heat and pulling and tightening and twisting and stabbing and searing and many things like this. And if you get to know that and see that it's different than what you first thought it was, it becomes a lot easier to be with it, to develop some equanimity around it. And as you do that, you'll notice that it is moving all the time. The sensations are arising and passing very quickly. They're moving around different parts in that area where you feel the pain. And one of the things you'll notice after a while is that there's always all these little gaps between the pain. That the pain is not constant throughout, but it's going like this with little gaps between it. And you start noticing the gaps between it. It's happening very fast, but as mindfulness gets stronger, you start noticing the gaps. And you notice the gaps and you realize that it's not always happening. Pain is not always there. And you can develop a lot of composure and equanimity when you realize it's only half of maybe it's only happening half of the time. That's a lot different than thinking it's happening all the time. So you know, so it becomes easier to be with it. As you pay more attention, more and more careful attention to the pain, with the stronger concentration and composure, we see it in deeper, deeper ways, and different, and more and more different kinds of ways. Different aspects of that experience reveal itself, and as the different aspects reveal themselves, it becomes less and less troublesome to experience it. And also, we develop a stronger and stronger kind of concentration, until finally you experience it no longer as suffering or pain at all. It's just a lot of very intense vibration. And sometimes it just completely goes away for various kinds of reasons. Sometimes because the concentration is so strong, sometimes because with enough awareness present at a place of holding, the body will release the holding. But in the process, for some people, you develop a lot of concentration by staying patiently with pain. And we're not really a concentration practice here, but concentration is often useful. Some people get attached to that concentration. It's not so uncommon for people who are working with a lot of pain in their meditation practice, and then will hate it, and they'll come, and they'll do everything they can to avoid it, and try all these things to avoid it. And then finally the pain passes, because everything passes eventually. And for some reason it passes. And they come for the next interview with the teacher, and they say, "I'm lost. I miss the pain. I don't know how to be mindful because I was so dependent on this painful object, the pain. It was kind of like it was doing half the work of my meditation. It kind of forced me to have attention somewhere. And suddenly the pain goes away, and you're kind of like, your crutch has disappeared. But anyway, pain is very concentrating and a very useful place. Also, physical pain resonates with a lot of our deeper tendencies towards grief and despair and worry and all kinds of things in that family. So that when physical pain starts arising, it tends to trigger all these other things, which is maybe ways in which we respond to life in general. So we get to see these things, get to explore them, and get us know ourselves much better. As part of my Zen training, when I went to a Zen monastery, you have to do this ritual. It's kind of a rite of initiation, or it feels more like a hazing. And you have to sit for, when I did it, for 5 to 10 days in meditation posture without moving. But not all the time, but usually when you meditate, we meditate for a certain period, like 40 minutes, and then there's a period of walking meditation to break up the periods of sitting. But for this ritual, you have to sit and not move from a half an hour after breakfast, well, until lunchtime. And then from half an hour after lunch until dinner time. And then half an hour after dinner time until going to sleep. And then from getting up in the morning until breakfast. So it's rather intense. And as it gets more intense, in order to cope, you have to bring a lot of awareness to paying attention, especially to these secondary reactions. Because if you don't pay attention to secondary reactions, the secondary reactions are going to overwhelm you. And it's going to be impossible. But if you can be really on top of it, moment by moment, to the way in which we react to this, to the pain, the way we respond to it, interpret it, hate it, and all these things, be there really present moment by moment, you can stay composed and it can be manageable to be with the pain. But you can't let a second go by because then the mind will kind of, you know, take over the situation. If the mind takes over, then it's, you know, it takes a while to get composed again. I'm not recommending this to anybody, but at the end of so it's 5 to 10 days, and no one tells you how long it's going to be between 5 and 10. But it depends. But it depends on how well you sat. And if you seem to sat, if you were really restless and kind of didn't move around a little bit, then it's longer. But if you sat really well, then it's shorter. So you're sitting and you don't know how long you're going to be there. And at some point, a person came and tapped me on my shoulder and, you know, told me, that's it. And when they told me it was it, I started crying. And the reason I started crying was that I felt the feeling I had that time was that I would never have that level of intimacy with myself as I had with that pain. And I was never going to put myself in that situation again. So that intimacy was so precious. And so I kind of cried a little bit, feeling I was going to lose that. And just to end more on a happy note, just to know that after a while I learned that you could have that intimacy without using pain as the vehicle for it. Just you practice your mindfulness. And it'll arise with mindfulness. So sitting with pain, there's a lot more I could say. I'm sorry that I talked over now, and I thought it was a short subject. And there's so much more to say. But I'll say one thing more about how to work with pain, and then I'll read a poem. And hopefully you'll be patient enough for that. The last thing to say is that one of the things you can do with any kind of pain, whether it's psychological, emotional, or physical, is practice loving kindness with it. And it's often a good idea anyway, because the basic attitude of mindfulness practice is an attitude of loving kindness to your experience. And we have so little loving kindness to the parts of ourselves that are difficult, like pain, that you can actually send loving kindness to your physical pain and kind of hold it there. And it's a way of being present for it in a soft and gentle way. And it's that soft and friendly, gentle way of being that we want to find with all our experience. And working with pain, we're not working with pain to be stoic or become, you know, great warriors or become, you know, samurais or whatever it is. If we work with pain, and you can choose how much you work with it, you can ride your edges and pull back, and you don't have to kind of jump into it all. But if you work with pain, to develop the capacity to be friendlier to your experience in the long term, to be a friendlier, more open-hearted person, and not to become a tough kind of whatever. And pain is often a symptom, and it's often as a symptom, it often opens up to aspects of our life that we need to attend to, whether it's emotional, psychologically, or whatever. And it's very useful to spend some time going through it and unraveling what needs to be unraveled as you do it. So then I'll end with a poem. And this is a poem by Rumi. And I wouldn't be surprised. I found later on, after I found this poem, a quote by Socrates. And since Socrates was very important for the Arab world, I wouldn't be surprised if this quote inspired the poem. Socrates wrote, or said, "Pain and pleasure are never present to a person at the same instant, and yet the person who pursues either is compelled to take the other." I think it's nice. The person who pursues either, if you pursue pleasure, watch out. You're asking for it. There's nothing wrong with pleasure. It's the pursuit of it sometimes, which can, not necessarily always, but can get you in trouble. One dervish said to another, "What was your vision of God's presence?" The other said, "I haven't seen anything, but for the sake of conversation, I'll tell you a story. God's presence is there in front of me, a fire on the left, a lovely stream on the right. One group walks towards the fire, into the fire, another toward the sweet flowing water. No one knows which are blessed and which not. Whoever walks into the fire appears suddenly in the stream. A head goes under on the water surface. That head pokes out of the fire. Most people guard against going into the fire and so end up in it. Those who love the water of pleasure and make it their devotion are cheated with this reversal. The trickery goes further. The voice of the fire tells the truth, saying, "I am not fire. I am fountainhead. Come into me and don't mind the sparks." If you are a friend of God, fire is your water. You should wish to have 100,000 sets of moth wings so you can burn them away one set a night. You've seen a musician make a bowl of rice. No, I don't want to read that. One molecule mote second thinking of God's reversal of comfort and pain is better than attending ritual. That splinter of intelligence is substance, the fire and water themselves, accidental, done with mirrors. So I certainly don't wish you any pain, and I certainly wish that you don't push too much with pain, but I don't wish that you avoid pain either. And finding the middle way, Buddhism is the middle way, and we should always remember that. And it's always a good teaching. And what's the middle way between pleasure and pain? I think the middle way is to be open to whatever life gives you and find your composure there. So, thank you all.